From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Well, he may have had trouble getting into the U.S. last week to attend a U.N. Security Council meeting about recent hostilities between his country and Washington, but Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif was an honored speaker at the Raisina Dialogue 2020 conference in New Delhi on Wednesday. The Raisina Dialogue is an annual multilateral conference where global leaders in policy, business, media, and civil society come to India's capital to discuss cooperation on a wide range of international policy matters. This was the first international event attended by the foreign minister after the U.S. strike that killed his country's top military official in Baghdad. Zarif had been barred entry into the U.S. to attend last week's Security Council session by the Trump administration. This was Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, in New Delhi Wednesday morning.
I think the developments over the past few weeks are very sad reflections of a very serious problem in the United States thinking about our region. First of all, they look at everything from their own perspective, not from the perspective of the people in this region. When they assassinated a revered general in Iraq, violating Iraqi sovereignty, they thought, as Secretary Pompeo tweeted, that people would be dancing in the streets of Tehran and Baghdad. Actually, he picked up a small gathering of a few and tweeted that we rid the region of a whatever he want to call him, and then people are dancing. That showed two things, which are very dangerous. And when combined, it becomes even more dangerous. Ignorance and arrogance. And when you become an arrogant ignorant or an ignorant arrogant, it becomes a disaster, particularly if you have a lot of power. That has been fueling mayhem in the region. Now you've seen the reaction, not just in Iran. I was surprised to hear that in 430 Indian cities, 430 Indian cities, there were spontaneous demonstrations and meetings to commemorate General Soleimani, the American terrorist. 430 Indian cities. Now, the United States talks about proxies. Do we have proxies in India? Are the proxies that we have in Iraq number in the millions, because millions came to the streets of Iraq to commemorate him? Well, in Iran, we have a country where people can state their views. Sometimes they state their views in excessive ways. Sometimes the reaction is excessive. But the fact of the matter is, last few nights, we've had people in the streets of Tehran demonstrating against the fact that they were lied to for a couple of days. Well, this was a very serious situation. We believe that it is. The fact that it wasn't disclosed early enough. Well, of course, if you look at comparable situations, it was disclosed too early, because there are incidents where 2 years, 10 years has gone by and nobody has claimed responsibility. So our military forces were brave enough to claim responsibility early on. But people are angry even with those 2 days. That is the expectation that people have with the government, that the government should not, should have disclosed the information. Of course, I, as foreign minister, and the president, we didn't know until Friday afternoon. And we made sure that the people knew either Friday night or early Saturday morning. And we managed to do that. But just compare the numbers. 9 million, 10 million people altogether turned out in the streets of not only Tehran, but various cities in Iran, and Iraq, and Lebanon, and India, and Russia, to commemorate Soleimani. that can tell you, I mean, if people, you cannot bring 9 million people to the streets with force. Doesn't happen. But you certainly cannot bring people, 8,000 people in Delhi, 9,000 people in Mumbai. You cannot bring them out by any proxy measure. So the United States needs to think again about our region. They're making mistake. They're adding mistake to another. Now we had this disaster of the shooting of a civilian airline. Accidental shooting, but shooting nevertheless. 180 families are mourning the loss of very, very bright young people. We lost a lot of very bright minds. Why did it happen? Because there was a crisis. People made mistakes, unforgivable mistakes, but it happened in the time of a crisis. We need to make sure that these crises will be prevented. Now, if I may, this morning I listened to my friend Sergei Lavrov talking about various proposals for peace and security in the Persian Gulf region. Now, I had proposed a non-aggression pact last year, which he was kind enough to welcome. This year, in the UN General Assembly, our president proposed the Hormuz Peace Endeavor, or HOPE. That is very similar to what he presented. Basically, a replica of Helsinki. That is, we have a set of a basket of principles, non-intervention, non-interference, non-aggression, peaceful settlement of dispute, respect for sovereignty, territorial integrity, all of that, plus a set of confidence-building measures, from cooperation in the field of desalination and nuclear safety, because the coasts of Persian Gulf are basically dotted with new or probably future nuclear power plants, as well as, I mean, going all the way up to military visits, to transparency in armaments, even to reduction in armaments. I mean, Iran would be very self-interested if we ask for reduction in armaments, because our arms expenditure right now are the lowest in the region. Saudi Arabia spent $67 billion on procurement. We last time, our total military expenditure last year was $16 billion. So we are all for reduction of military expenditure. We are all for arms control in the region. And these can all be a part of this package that we call HOPE, because we need hope in this region. We have to get rid of this despair that is basically making the young generation in the entire region looking at a very, very unclear future. That has to change. And if we want to bring back our young generation, bring them home instead of them going out. I mean, we, like India, have a very, very intelligent and capable diaspora, which is a very big asset. But we need them at home too. And I think the other countries in the region need them at home too. So we need to create hope in our region for them to return.
That was Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif speaking at the Raisina Dialogue in New Delhi Wednesday. During a Q&A, he was asked about the status of the JCPOA, the so-called Iran nuclear deal, and whether or not it was still alive.
Well, it depends on Europe. The dispute resolution mechanism was triggered by Iran on 10 May 2018. In a letter that I wrote to Federica Mogherini and a letter that I wrote to Secretary General of the United Nations. The letter that I wrote to the Secretary General of the United Nations is a document of the United Nations available on UN website. My letter of 10 May 2018 to the Secretary General of the United Nations. But I officially invoked Article 36 or paragraph 36 of JCPOA. You know, JCPOA, the good thing about JCPOA, and in all modesty, since I negotiated it, I believe it was one of the best deals that has been made in the recent past, one of the few major achievements of multilateral diplomacy. The good thing about JCPOA is that it was done in absolute mistrust, mutual mistrust. So we have mechanisms in the JCPOA to deal with cases of violations. We did not presume that people will abide by their obligations. Basically, Iran and the United States. They didn't trust us, we didn't trust them, so we put up a mechanism. Those mechanisms in the JCPOA are paragraph 36 and 37. Paragraph 36 talks about any country of the seven participants, the 5+1 plus Iran, who believes that the other side is in violation or in the JCPOA wording, significant non-performance of its obligations, it can raise the issue. And then the political directors will need to meet, then the ministers will need to meet, and then if the side that has raised the complaint believes that the other side has not fulfilled their promise, they can reduce their commitments. And then paragraph 37 talks about going back to the Security Council and reversing the sanctions, what is known as snapback. Now, on May 8th, 2018, in my upteenth letter to Federica Mogherini, because my first letter to Federica Mogherini went on September 2, 2016, when I complained about the United States failing to authorize Airbus to sell Iranian airplanes. Now, they kept the request, even Obama administration kept the request of Airbus to sell airplanes to Iran from February to September, 7 months. Incidentally, for my European friends to understand, it took Boeing 2 months to get the authorization, but Airbus 7 months. Unfortunately, the Europeans just tag along. What happened was that I wrote the first letter, but on 8th of May, 2018, on 10th of May, 8th of May, President Trump withdrew. On 10th of May, I wrote the letter. We had the political directors meeting, ministerial meeting. Then they issued a statement. 11 promises given to Iran. Commercial, oil, shipping, aviation, banking, everything. 11 commitments. Okay. Nothing happened. In August, I wrote another letter saying that none of those promises have been implemented. Not only EU is in violation of those promises, but violation of its own commitments. Because in the JCPOA, it's not just the United States which has made commitments. Annex 2 of JCPOA, I'm giving you the address to look me up. Don't trust me, because it's trust. No, we don't trust and we verify. If you want to trust and verify, fine. But if I'm fine with you not trusting me. Check Annex 2, paragraphs 1 to 3. Paragraphs 1 to 3 of Annex 2, which my European friends don't seem to be like to reading it, because none of them participated in negotiating the deal. None of the current foreign ministers of the EU were there when we negotiated this deal. Paragraphs 1 to 3 talk about European commitments. Paragraph 4 and on talk about American commitments. So they have independent commitments in JCPOA. And because we didn't trust each other, we put in writing that just making a legislation is not enough. You have to show effects. Read paragraph 3 of Annex 2. They need to show effect. So you look outside and you see I don't need to go to any court to show that there is no effect. They're not buying oil from us. All of the companies have withdrawn from Iran. So Europe is in violation, not of its commitments after US withdrawal, but of its commitments in the JCPOA. What they do not want you to hear is, first of all, Iran did trigger paragraph 36. We are implementing paragraph 36 right now. That is the dispute resolution mechanism. And secondly, that they say, we're not responsible for what the United States did. Okay, but you're independent countries. Europe, EU is the largest global economy. So why do you allow the United States to bully you around? Because once you allow the United States to bully you, then they'll bully you on the Nord Stream pipeline. A bully, you remember bullies in your high school? They started with the smaller kid. They started with the smaller kid. Once you allowed them, or you laughed and encouraged them when they were kicking and beating the smaller kid, hoping that you'll take some favor from them and be in the right side of their heart, then they got to you. That's how bullies behave. And we see it. The United States is now imposing sanctions on the North Stream, on its closest ally. So paragraph 36 was implemented in May, in August, and finally in November 2018, I wrote a letter to Federica Mogherini. I said, we have triggered and exhausted. These letters are available. If you want, I can publish them. Actually, I tweeted last time that they made this erroneous remark, I tweeted a part of that letter, that we have triggered and exhausted paragraph 36. Because there was no satisfaction for Iran, now we are going to reduce our commitments. Unless you meet in 14 days and discuss this. They even didn't take care of that. I will respond to this letter by the E3. They didn't even respond to my letter. I think they still believe that the sun never sets in the British Empire. They didn't even respond. As if we were just subjects of JCPOA, not partners in JCPOA. If you read JCPOA, Iran is not a subject. We're a member, we're a participant. So none of my letters they responded to, including my last letter in November of 2018, where I wrote that we have exhausted the procedure and now it's the time for us to take measures. We gave them another 6 months, from November to May of 2019, before we took our first step. And the steps that we have taken are all within JCPOA. And we have said immediately, after you implement your commitments, we will reverse. That is, Iran is prepared to reverse all these measures as soon as they implement their commitment. Now they're telling me that some of these measures are irreversible. And they're right. But is the lives of 180 people we lost because of the tension created by the United States reversible? Let's not go that far. Our economy has suffered without any fault of Iran. Over the past 2 years, hundreds of billions of dollars in damages. Are they going to pay us back? If they pay us back those hundreds of billions, I'll make sure that everything we have done is reversed beyond any shadow of doubt. Of course it's not reversible. Our choices make the situation irreversible. But it's our choices. We have the ability to make a better choice. Europe had the ability to make a better choice. Europe does not need to tag along. It's not in its own interest. Now, the United States didn't like General Soleimani, although he was the single most effective force against Daesh. If you don't believe me, see they're celebrating. Who are celebrating the death of Soleimani? Not the ordinary people. In 430 Indian cities, they mourned his death. Two people are celebrating, President Trump and Pompeo and Daesh. You call them strange bedfellows? Not necessarily.
Iran has asked for the removal of US troops from the region, especially from Iraq. That is the demand they made.
No, we didn't ask for them. Iraqis did.
Iraqis did that?
Yeah, it was the Parliament of Iraq which voted against massive US lobbying. Massive. I mean, the United States and its allies called every single parliamentarian, tried to keep them home. But the Iraqi parliament voted to ask the United States to leave.
Will you be happy to see them leave?
Well, I think the United States has never brought peace and stability in the region. Look at the situation. They came to Afghanistan 19 years ago. We did not, I mean, we objected in principle, but we did not take any action. Actually, I went to Bonn, and I was instrumental, in all modesty, in getting the new Afghan government in place. Don't listen to me, listen to the Americans who participated in that, including the head of the US delegation. I forgot his name. Or Afzal Khalilzad, who was there. We didn't object. Look at what's happening now. The United States is negotiating with the Taliban to do what? To get out. What has the United States brought to Iraq? Security? President Trump has said himself, we spent $7 trillion and only brought misery to the region and to ourselves. But he has spent $1 trillion since he became president on the same waste of money. So it's not Iran asking. I think countries in the region, of course there are elements in the region who want the United States in. And we don't interfere. If Afghanistan wants to keep the United States in Afghanistan, their choice. If Iraq wants to keep the United States in Iraq, their choice. We object to that, but it's their choice. But if the United States want to use the territory of Iraq to violate the sovereign integrity of Iraq, the territorial integrity of Iraq, and hit an official guest of the Iraqi government inside Iraqi territory. Look at the situation. Look at this formula. United States used two bases in Iraq, the bases that we hit, one of them, to carry out operations in Iraq against an Iraqi guest. Who would stand for that? I mean, you just imagine. Imagine yourself in the shoes of the Iraqis. Now, of course, we responded. And some of your audience may say, you did the same. No, we didn't do the same. It was an unprovoked attack abusing Iraqi territory against an Iraqi guest inside Iraq. We took action in self-defense under Article 51 of the Charter against a military attack on our military personnel in a foreign land by targeting the base from which the attack had come. That is, I mean, I wrote my PhD dissertation on self-defense. That is a classical definition of self-defense under Article 51 following an armed attack. I do not believe in preemptive self-defense. I do not believe in preventive self-defense. I think none of us should, because these are dangerous. These destroy the concept of self-defense altogether. But we need to look at the reality. Now, the United States accused Soleimani of trying to wage a war against the United States by hitting four of its embassies. Now we know that President Trump authorized the killing 7 months ago, so I had nothing to do with that. We also know that there was no threat against US embassy. And I can tell you that Soleimani went to Iraq not only to deliver a diplomatic message to the Prime Minister of Iraq, but also to calm down the Iraqis who were enraged by the United States killing 25 Iraqi members of Iraqi armed forces for the killing of one US contract. You call that proportionate? That is why President Trump, against all principles of international law, and I agree with Sergei this morning, who believes that the United States wants to get rid of international law, that's why they talk about rule-based international system. The principle of proportionality has been a principle of international law forever, for as long as international law has been in existence. And President Trump says, we will respond disproportionately. I mean, he doesn't even hide that. He makes it known. Are we supposed to live in that type of world? Where somebody, in the past, people violated international law. I mean, they did. Everybody did. All states did. I'm not a naive fool. Every state violated international law. But at least they found a modicum of justification. Now the president of the United States is going out and saying, I don't care about international law. I'm going to be disproportionate. I'm going to attach cultural sites. Nobody is telling him it's a war crime. Now, Pompeo tries to walk away from that, but he himself says, and that's a Newsweek quote. I'm not making it up. Go look at Newsweek. If Iran wants its people to eat, it has to follow what the United States says. What do you call that in international law? Starvation, genocide, both of them are international crimes. Secretary Pompeo, not only threatening, but it's acting on this, trying to prevent Iranians to eat, to have medicine. I think he should get a good lawyer. Not just for Congress, because he's refusing to testify.
When the Iranian foreign minister was asked about the situation with ISIS at this point, he said,
I think the war against Daesh just suffered a major setback, and Daesh just won a major victory. I think we need to recreate the coalition against Daesh, because the current coalition against Daesh used the basis of the coalition to kill the most effective anti-Daesh general. So we need a new coalition.
With the US as a partner?
Well, I think US should show that it wants to fight Daesh. For the time being, it helped Daesh. I said the two people celebrating the death of General Soleimani are ISIS and President Trump. They have to say, where are they standing? The United States, we knew where Daesh was standing. Now we know where President Trump is standing. Somebody has to clarify. I hope Daesh at least says that I'm not following President Trump.
So do you think there is room for diplomacy? There are back channels which can operate and the very, very heated atmosphere which is built up.
Well, if there is no room for diplomacy, I'll lose my job. So I have a self-interest.
So what are there back channels? Are there some back channels which are operating?
We have a very official channel through the Swiss where we send messages to the United States. And we did send the message to the United States the night of the missile attack, action in self-defense, that this was self-defense, that we have concluded our self-defense, and that if the United States responds, it will receive response from Iran, because our action was in reaction to the United States. Well, that was the part that Iran had to take in defending its territory, in defending its citizens, and in defending its military. It's up to the United States. We've used diplomatic channels. Secretary Pompeo also used diplomatic channels in a very undiplomatic way, and he got what he deserved in response. But I think Iran is interested in diplomacy. We're not interested in negotiating with the United States, because we've done it and it still hurts. I negotiated with Secretary Kerry, but I didn't negotiate with John Kerry, and he didn't negotiate with Javad Zarif. I negotiated with the Secretary of State of the United States. He negotiated with the Foreign Minister of Iran. I delivered on every point I signed on to, and you don't have to trust me. You trust 15 consecutive reports of the IAEA, including 5 reports after President Trump came to office. Now, the United States didn't implement its commitments. Now it has withdrawn. If I listen to President Trump that you need to... Today, he repeated what Prime Minister Johnson imprudently said yesterday, that we want a Trump deal. And President Trump is very happy. Yeah, we want a Trump deal. I had a US deal and the US broke it. If I have a Trump deal, how long will it last? Another 10 months, maybe until his flight from Canada? You remember the G8?
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.